Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So as we're discussing then, Sambandha Abhideyam Prayojana, that is the how subject matter is divided, right? That is the Vedic system. It's the best system for presentation because all subject matter then is included in this. Then the means of presentation, the logical presentation, that is what's called Panch Anga Nyaya, right? The five limbs of logic. Right? So then we have they cover the same points. It's just a matter of whether they emphasize simply logical presentation or whether you're having to deal with, it's more of a debate, right? Where there's the opposing arguments are, you're not just presenting opposing arguments like Prabhupada will say, some may say, and then he'll say, but there's no one actually there opposing. But when there's someone opposing there, you're actually talking with the person who has the doubt. Then the form takes on the element that it takes into consideration more that person's doubt because you're actually having to deal with it. The other one, you bring it up and clear it, but here you make the presentation. You actually deal with it at the moment. So then the five aspects are basically you have your thesis, what you're saying, that this is your point, and it can basically a thesis. Generally, you'll see it's always presented in one sentence, like that. It's very clear exactly what you're trying to say. Then after that, then you give your reasons for that thesis. It means that you're saying Krishna is God. Now, there's so many reasons Krishna can be God, right? So then you say no one is equal to him, no one is superior to him. That's your reason. Right? So now, along with your reason, generally that's when the doubt arises. Right? Because you say the thesis, much of the time the thesis is too concise to get too many doubts. You might have a doubt immediately, but the point is generally in your explanation, that's when the doubt comes up. But somebody else is, the demigods are equal to Krishna, they're greater, he came afterwards. He's worshipping Ramachandra. Ramachandra's worshipping Lord Shiva. For his blessings to kill Ravana, like this. So the doubt may come up from there because you've made your point. Then you have your antithesis. So they give their reason now. They have their doubt. This is my doubt that he's not God. And then they say, what is their thesis, right? So that is also, you clear that through your examples, right? So then, using your examples, you'll clear away whatever doubts that they may have. And then, once that is done, then you give an alternative viewpoint. It means they have this idea, and you're saying something else, that if they'll look at it slightly differently than how they're looking at it, then it's all synthesized. Right? And then, having done that, and giving any further explanations that now, like solidify it, then you come to the final conclusion and supporting, proper connection to other scriptures. Right? So if you're just making a pleasant presentation, you're making your point, you're giving your reasons, you're giving your explanations, you're bringing all that together into one point, and then you're bringing it to one point, and then giving basis on other shastras how this connects. Right? If it's dealing in an argument, then or a debate, then you're presenting your point, they'll bring up their doubt, they'll give their reasons, you will then give yours and show the alternative viewpoint, and then you'll conclude it back into yours. Right? So the modern logic, they'll give thesis and antithesis and synthesis. So they're they're combining these five into three, but the one thing they don't do is synthesis. They don't come to a conclusion. That's generally, that point is left off, right? And the process of synthesis means you'll have into given points, and then based on those points, then you will show how their philosophy is already contained in what you've said, right? So the synthesis means, so they're taking you're giving examples and explanations and that as part of synthesis. It's the part of the process, but it's actually two different parts. And conclusion they'll always avoid, right? Academics basically don't like conclusions, right? 2 + 2 = 4, that's okay. I can see it with my senses, you know, this is supposedly, you know, a rock made out of certain elements like that, and I can, you know, verify that, that's okay. But if I want to say this is good or bad, that they want to avoid like the plague, right? That. So, does that make sense? So, Prabhupada then points out here, this is, oh no, here's, okay. So, basically, how these are used, now it's a matter of how this logic is used. The logic is used to present or establish a point. That in the Shastras, as we go through, then they will come up with a particular point that they're making. So the Panchanga Nyaya will be used to make that point. That point is called, technically called, an Adhikarana. Right? So, in a presentation, then there'll be so many Adhikaranas. Right? You know, like Bhaktivinoda means you have your Dasamul, so those are 10 points, but within those there'll be so many Adhikaranas. That you'll have, you know, the nature of the soul, how the soul is servant of Krishna, how they can only function on that platform. So all these need to be proven, because otherwise other people have a different idea of what the soul is. So then the Panchanga Nyaya is used to establish that. So then he mentions here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains the application of an Adhikarana. Quote, though the various Upanishadic mantras have apparently conflicting features, they are reconciled by the aphorisms of Sri Vyasa in his Uttaramimamsa philosophy under different systematical logical categories known as nyayas or adhikaranas. Each theme of an adhikarana has been fully dealt with by panchanga, or fivefold positions of the logical system to meet all opposing controversies. So in other words, you're presenting a point that's a logic. And so that logic then has five aspects of presentation. Does that make sense? Or we're going through this is because we'll start to note when we get into the purports that Prabhupada presents everything exactly in this way. He'll nicely use these five. You can just pick that out in the purport like that. So there's a... Okay, yes. And then Prabhupada mentions in Chaitanya Charitamrita about this Panchanga Nyaya. Quote, every theme must necessarily be explained with reference to pratigya, or a solemn declaration of the purpose of the treatise. The solemn declaration given in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa, which indicates that this book was written with a solemn declaration to inquire about the absolute truth. Similarly, reasons must be expressed, hetu. Examples must be given in terms of various facts, udaharana, and the theme must be gradually brought near for understanding, upanaya. And finally, it must be supported by authoritative quotations from the Vedic Shastras, nigamana. This is Adi Lila 7106 purport. All right, so that is particularly, I think this is Gotama's use of it. So, what we mentioned, the thesis, the reasons, the examples, the further explanations, and the supporting quotations from scriptures. So that's the general, because you're writing a book, you're writing the purports, that's how you're going to present it. Or we're in the class here, it'll be like that. Somebody may have a question, but it's not a major, argument. Major argument, then it's the person's argument becomes a prominent part of this. Otherwise, it's not. You're presenting and just clearing the doubts as you go. So Vedanta Sutra then works in that way, because Vyasadeva is just writing. He's from the essence of the Upanishads. He's giving those points, all the Adhikaranas, and presenting them according to this Panchanga Nyaya. Then this giving of, Nigamana, this fifth item is also called Sangati. So this Sangati then also then is of various kinds. You'll have, one is like what Prabhupada mentioned, that's the Shastra Sangati. That is consistent in the Shastra. So the Brahma Sutras are on Atato Brahma Jigyasa. So every sutra in the Brahma Sutras must have that as the topic, as the theme. And they're just presenting various aspects of that. So that's Shastra. Then it must be that within it, you'll have a major chapter or something, or a major section like a canto, like that, like in the Bhagavatam. Then that canto has a main theme. And like Prabhupada says, you know, the summum bonum, or these different, status quo, different things he'll give. That's the theme of that canto. Then everything in that canto must be in line with the purpose of that canto and the work. And then you have the particular subsection of the chapter. Right? And then that chapter has a particular point it's making, so everything in that must be consistent there. And that chapter is consistent with the bigger section, and that's consistent with the work. Like that. So also then, he had mentioned that, from the Vedic Shastras, this is also even then beyond that, is that what Prabhupada's mentioning here is you connect one Shastra to another. Like you see, in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's always quoting Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Gita, he's always quoting Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's quoting Gita and Bhagavatam. Right? So when you're dealing with one Shastra, you show its connection that this same point is being made in another Shastra. It's being supported there. So then that's also a broader range of Shastra Sangati, that it means not only the one Shastra you're dealing with, but all other Shastras. Because all Shastras are actually dealing on one basic subject matter, and that's Krishna. Right? That's actually the overall theme of the Vedas, is service to Krishna. Then each Shastra will have its specific approach, how it is bringing that out and showing that, how Krishna's position is being brought out. Right? Then within that Shastra, it will have various subdivisions which are all consistent with all this. Does that make sense? So that's how we can so strongly speak from one Shastra to another, because it's all consistent. All the Shastras are saying that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, that we're the soul, our business is to serve Him. Pure love of God is the ultimate goal. So this Sambandha Abhide Prayojana, this is all Shastras are saying. Then the specific Shastra we're dealing with says the same thing, right, from its own particular perspective. Then within that, all the subsections of that Shastra are saying the same thing. So we have no problem, we're confident, we know what the Shastras say. So we don't have to worry, well, I don't know this, I don't know. They're saying the same thing anyway. So if somebody brings up a verse from another Shastra, then you simply have to bring it in line with the philosophy that's given in the Bhagavatam and explain it in that way, right? That's the Mimamsa, as we were discussing, or the, what do you call it, hermeneutics. The law of interpretation is that we have our method of understanding the verses as given to us by Srila Vyasadeva and the Acharyas. So whatever verse there is in the Shastra, we can interpret it that way and be confident that it's correct. Because the method we're using is given by Krishna himself, Lord Chaitanya himself, by the Acharyas themselves. So we know this is the ultimate conclusion. So many other conclusions are there, right? But this is the ultimate conclusion. So the perspective of those who know Krishna in Braja, right? That then gives this overall that any other form doesn't give. These other forms are only partial. Right? So that's the... Right? Any questions on this? Just on this Panchanga Nyaya, the concept? No? Yes.
So basically all our philosophy is logically presented by that system.
Yes, all our philosophy. All the Acharyas use it. Vedanta Sutra uses it. They all use it. It's just a matter of being able to understand. Because now in this... This will be the reason why sometimes we don't understand its logical presentation. Now, the Sangati, now you're getting what between Adhikaranas, right? Means now we've talked about the Shastra, other Shastras, their connection, then the overall, the major sections, and then the subsections. Then within those subsections, they have Adhikaranas, right? The main points that are being made. What connects one Adhikarana to the next, that Sangati then takes six forms. Right? This is where we generally get thrown off. Because the other is pretty straightforward, like that. So there are six sorts. One, akshepsha, or objection. Right? Somebody may object. So that comes up in the discussion. That's kind of like somebody says this, and so, you know, it probably says one may say, you know, or some say, like that. The other, Dishtanta, or illustration. You start to give an illustration about that. Like that. So this illustration can be as big as the whole story of Puranjana. Right? It means Narad Muni's making the point that your karmakanda, you know, methods are not going to make you happy. You have to worship the Supreme Lord. And then for Prachina Barhishat, he's never heard this before. He's only been in the association of Karmakandi Brahmins. He's never heard that there's something beyond, that there's transcendence. So it's like, what's that? You know? So then, you know, whole chapters, you know, much of the canto goes in an illustration that is simply now connecting this to now he'll make the point. So now that will be all his, you know, the illustration, which is then his explanations. And then he'll come to the conclusion that therefore you should worship the Supreme Lord. So then you'll see one point here, the Adhikarana. Then you go through this, all so many things, which will be so many other Adhikaranas being explained within that illustration. Then you'll come back to the original Adhikarana that was being made. So all that is actually so many Adhikaranas and their explanations, that Panchanga Nyaya is being used within one part of one Adhikarana. Does that make sense? That's why it can get very complex. Pratidrishtanta, or counter-illustration. You give one illustration that didn't work so good, then you give a different one. Right? Or you're presenting the opposing argument. This is their illustration. You give an illustration to counter that. Right? Does that make sense? So this idea of that Bhagavatam only has analogies and it's not actually real, that means the persons saying that don't understand the Vedic logic and presentation like that. Because this system of presentation is not meant for academics. Right? It's meant for those who want to actually understand the Shastra. Therefore, they will think all these analogies is so the Bhagavatam's not actually real, so we don't have to listen to anything the Bhagavatam says. Right? That's their conclusion. Right? Yes? Yes, because as it was explained previously, that only when the study, the knowledge is applied with faith that you want to use it, then the scriptures reveal themselves. Otherwise, you can learn so many facts and figures. But you don't actually get anywhere like that. You don't really understand. Then, prasanga, or incidental illustration. That comes up not because you are planning to put it there. You are going along in a logical presentation, but the other person had a question or something. Or you know the mentality of the person, so as you're explaining one thing and you hit upon a point, you know that needs to be more explained. So then you go off on a side point illustration within your illustration. Right? You're explaining things, and then you go off on a side thing. So that means you're already going from, you know, basically your thesis to your conclusion. Then within that, you're also making other smaller theses and conclusion just to make it that they're convinced of that aspect, that illustration that you've made, those examples. Right? Then utpati, or introduction, means that something is new. You don't know the topic. So therefore, you go into a whole explanation of that whole topic so that you're familiar with it, so then it can be used within your explanation. So then that seems, oh, well, this is a whole different topic matter, right? That's generally how we look at it. Oh, it's a different subject matter, so it's no, this is part of the foundation for making the point. Right? And last is apavada, or exception. It means that you've, how do you say? Something is normally going along, but you're pointing out the exceptions to the rule. Like you're making the rule that, you know, when one touches stool, then one must take a bath. But there is the exception. If it's cow dung, that's purifying, and then you may go into pointing out how the cow is pure and the background behind it and the blessings by Lakshmi Devi and all the different things like this, that therefore then the cow, then you think it's a discussion about the cow. No, we're actually discussing about purity. And, you know, the cow is pure, so it's part of the discussion, but the real discussion was touching things impure, you must purify yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So with those six forms of sangati, that holds together one point that's being made in the next. That's why also it's not recommended you skip through in a book and just kind of like read here and there, because you won't actually get what the book's about. Oh, it's about this or about that. No, you won't actually get the main theme, and it's using all these other points as examples. Okay? So, yeah, like that. Does that make sense? So, that's very important. And then we can see in that it's going off into all these other aspects. Right. Then we see is that, then that will be presented when we're dealing in that you have how to get an understanding of the theme, right? Because now what we've found out here is that a theme will be presented through these five different forms, and this last of the five forms, and it has so many side points on how it may be connected to the next point. But then the question comes up, how do we understand the point? Right? How do we know what the point is? Right? What is the adhikarana? So then that is understood through what's called mimamsa, or the tatparyalingas. Right? So these tatparyalingas, let's see, where's the tatparyalingas? Okay. It's not in here? Oh, it's a different word. Okay. Okay, so that is done by, there's six ways that you can tell. You want to know what the book's about. So then you have the beginning and the end. In other words, how it opens and how it closes. Because as we said, Prabhupada gives the example of Brahma Sutras opens with the Tato Brahma Jigyasa. That means the book is going to be about that. So everything in between. So how it opens, how it closes, like we see also in Manu. It opens where the sages, they approach Lord Brahma and says that you know Varnashram in connection to how to use it to serve the Lord, to actually realize the Lord. Right? Everybody else knows Varnashram as a social system for Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. But you know Varnashram, how to use it as Daiva Varnashram, in connection to Krishna, and so how to go back to Godhead. Right? So that's what makes the Manu Samhita special, because it is how to follow Varnashram connected to Krishna. Right? And in the conclusion, at the very end, then it says a Brahman who follows all this then will attain, you know, perfection and all these different things. So we can understand is that therefore the whole point of following the Varnashram as given in Manu is to develop one's relationship with the Supreme Lord. Right? It's to express that. Then you know that that's what the book's about. So beginning and end. Then you have repetition. Right? Or let's just go on a little bit on this beginning. So, So in the beginning, we have what's called Anubandha Chatushtaya. That, show me the papers. Anubandha Chatushtaya, then it is the introduction to the book, or the, how you say? The invocation. The invocation actually establishes everything about the book. So in there, there will be, it will consist of, it'll take different forms. It will take the form of paying obeisances to the teacher or the worshipable deity or both. It'll take the form of asking for blessings from the Lord or giving blessings to the readers. Like that, glorifying the Lord. And it will summarize the subject matter of the book. Right? So now, in doing that, it will bring out the qualifications of the person studying it, then the connection between the book and its subject, how this book is actually dealing with the subject, what's the angle on it, the subject matter itself, what is the book is actually about, and what the reader will gain by learning this and practicing it. Right? So all that is said within the introduction. That's why the introduction is important. Sometimes these introductions are taken also in the modern academic thing as interpolation that they're put in because they deal with so many things that doesn't make sense. And also the element is sometimes it seems that it's very short, sometimes it seems very long. Sometimes this introduction, this Anubandha Chatushtaya, the invocation may be a full chapter in itself. Because it sometimes can just say that it's about a certain thing, or it can be list details. Like an Arthashastra, it will list the details of all the points that are going to be made in the whole Arthashastra in the opening. Like that. He gives a very simple opening just about, you know, glories to the deity, this, that, and then goes into this. So he very much emphasizes the topics. Right? Because it's Artha, it's practical, you're going to get your results, you have to know what's going on, so he emphasizes that aspect. Poetic works will generally emphasize more the praises to the deity, you know, the blessings upon those who are hearing it. In any case, it depends on the work, but they carry these same elements. So that's how by the opening, you can tell what the book's about. So the opening and the conclusion then will give you a very solid foundation of what the book is about. Like in Bhagavatam, it opens the Supreme Lord, glorifying the Supreme Lord. Second verse says, this is about real religion, not any other kind of religion. We kick out any other religion than that which is connected to the Supreme Lord. And who is this for? It is for the rasiks, those who are interested in tasting the interactions or the pastimes between the Lord and his devotees. Right? So then we know what's there. So the qualification of the person to read the book means they have to be interested in that. They can't have to be freed from the need for material, you know, how you say, bhukti and mukti, like that, because that's kicked out. So that person then will get something from the book. Right? This book is then established. It's been heard from Sukadeva Goswami, you know, that he has heard all these things. He's presented it very nicely to the sages. And so by the subject matter, the subject's about the Lord, and by it, you will be able to establish yourself in pure unalloyed devotional service. Right? So the first three verses of Bhagavatam are complete in themselves. It gives you a complete overview of what the whole Bhagavatam is. Then the rest of the Bhagavatam will be all in pursuance of that. Right? And if we see the last verse is talking about those who are intelligent are going to take up the Sankirtan movement, like that, and be absorbed in the Lord's glory. So then we can understand is that here is saying what it is, and the last is actually what you're going to do with it. So then it's we see from there. Then the next point is repetition. What is brought up again and again and again, you know that's important. Like how many times does Krishna say in the Gita about performing your duties, you know, with knowledge, you know, for him, remembering him with devotion, right? All those different aspects, he will say, sometimes he only mentions three out of those five, sometimes he mentions four, sometimes all five, but it comes up again and again and again, so you can understand this is important. Or then you have like the verses yo yo yum yum, so then, you know, then it's not that, you know, you're dealing with a kid there that's sucking on a lolly and playing with a, you know, the yo-yo or something. And so it's a matter of there's something important here, therefore it's repeated, right? Many, I've seen Sanskritists that describe that there's something wrong in this Sanskrit. Why would they have to say it twice? So this means they may know some grammar, but they do not know logic. Otherwise, they wouldn't say these things. Right? That's why one needs to know all these things. Otherwise, a lot of funny things get, you know, go around in the name of education. Right? You know, somebody, how do you say? That's what Mother used to say. If you had half a brain, you'd be dangerous. Right? You know, so, or a little knowledge is dangerous. Right? So you have to have enough knowledge, then you stop being dangerous. Right? So that's the... Right? Repetition. So, or we say, we see Krishna in the Gita says, you know, I've said all this, but I will say it again, you know, like that. And he even, yeah, so he even says that, I've explained this, now we'll hear it again from another angle. Then you see also the third chapter and the fifth chapter, right? Karma Yoga. It's repeated. So what does that mean? It's important. So that element of doing service to Krishna through your activities, engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, that's very important. But one is explaining the importance of just engaging them and not doing something else, and the other one is explaining doing that with knowledge. So in other words, it's the same thing taking a step forward, but it's still repetition. Right? Does that make sense? Right. So then, then uniqueness, that's something that hasn't been explained before, something very special, it's brought out and it's given special attention, that uniqueness. That then means that's important. You know, so many things will be going along in natural progression, then something will be brought to light, right? So that's special. Then you know there's something important there, like that. Result, whenever it tells what the result will be, you know that's important. Right? As soon as it says that, you know, by doing this, then one will, how you say, by devotional service, one automatically gets, gyan and vairag. So that means this is important. Right? Devotional service, by performing it, you get this result. Right? So that's immediately being presented, right in the beginning. So we can understand that, therefore, devotional service becomes important. Because it's what's getting your the results. Then praise, when they praise something, you know, so the praise of devotional service, praise of the association of devotees, praising the Lord, you know, all these things, then you understand these things are important. These are major elements. And then illustrations, right? So whatever you're illustrating, that means that point is important. Otherwise, why would you illustrate it? You just go along and say something. But when you give illustrations, you're giving more emphasis to the point, so it's very important. Right? So, therefore, for that big illustration of Puranjana, it's important to understand that karma is going to give you some reactions. There may be no sin, but there's still reactions. Right? So that's not good enough. You want to be happy, so you're doing these yajnas. So you're having animal sacrifices. Your killing of the animals is not violent. That's given by Shastra. Because it is being done according to the scriptures, according to sacrifice. The animal is benefited, you're benefited. But, so you will not go to hell. There's no sin. But it doesn't mean there's not going to be a reaction. All those animals, they're also waiting there with all their horns and all that, because even though they got benefited, they didn't appreciate, you know, being killed. So therefore, when you come, they're going to, how you say, express their dissatisfaction, like that. Okay. So these six, it says, are the sixfold indications in ascertaining the purport of a text. Right? So this then is used in all the different literatures. This is everything that's used so that you can figure out what is being done. Because sometimes there's a question of what's important, then this is what you have to look at. Otherwise, you can lift anything from anywhere, you know. And then, 3 days ago you said, I was talking to you, well, what did you say to him? Well, I said this, you know. And then later on, we're having a totally different discussion, and then they said, you know, I'm saying, no, everybody knows, you know, everybody's saying, who says? And then I lift from a different conversation, well, he said, because in the word he used, I said, but it had nothing to do with this conversation. So you can do that very easily. You know, you can lift from the purports, you can lift from the conversations, just an isolated point. But it has to be taken in context, because the Tatparyalingas means all these six have to be looked at. So if Prabhupada once says one thing, but six times says something else, that six times what he said, that's the point, not the other one. You have to see what's the context that he gave it. Therefore, it's some variety of sangati. He's been trying to connect, like we were reading the other day, and on the BBT. Is that, you know, we know that the Prabhupada made the BBT separate from ISKCON in management and legal as a legal entity, because if anything happens within ISKCON, the books will still be there. Because if the books are there, then you can, you know, like a phoenix from the ashes, the whole movement will come up again. But there's always the thing of who controls it, right? That's always the, you know, who's in charge and like this kind of thing. So they're having a conversation with Prabhupada about this. And there, that means you can see from some, there's kind of the angle that, you know, it's for, the ISKCON's the beneficiary, so therefore ISKCON should control it. And Prabhupada's saying, you know, this is your concept, you know, kind of like this, and, you know, this is your consideration. And going on like this, and you can see as from it, he makes points that make it sound like it's kind of like that. But then you see at the end, He then says that, no, the BBT is what it is. If you can do what the BBT is supposed to do, you can also be a trustee. In other words, you want to control the BBT, fine. Be qualified and be a trustee. So he brings it right back to what he had said in the beginning. But because there was a whole thing on, well, who controls it, it is, yes. ISKCON men who are trustees, they run it. So ISKCON runs it in the form of trustees. Not in the form of the GBC, like this. So you can, but if you pull out just one of the statements of Prabhupada in there, you could say, no, see, Prabhupada is saying it's under the GBC, like this. But he's saying it is, but its management is different. I mean, the GBC want to preach, they want some books, they want to print in this language, therefore the BBT prints it. But managing the printing of it and all that, that's the BBT's business. The money that they have, that's the BBT's business. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. So, like that, you can take any topic and pull out of it something, but it has to be this whole element of the Panchanga Nyaya, the Tatparyalingas. These elements, if they're in place, then you can actually tell what's being discussed. Otherwise, it can easily be taken out of context. And this bewilders devotees, because you can take any verse and, you know, different parties argue it completely different. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's, you know, you can use it in so many ways. You can use sarva dharmam parityaja mame kam sharanam raja. So therefore just surrender to Krishna, stop being mental and just, you know, do your service. Like that. So that's one way of using it. Another way of using it is that Krishna says, I don't have any of these services. I don't have varnashram, we don't follow. We just give up all religion and so all that. And so I just surrender to him. So why I should listen to you? Because that's part of the, you know, the whole system of varnashram and duties and all that. And Krishna says, I'm talking, that, what, you know, therefore we give that all up. You know, so I just have to do whatever I want. Just chant Krishna's name, do bhajan however I like, when I like, when I feel. I don't follow any form, because that would be wrong, right? Does that make sense? But we're following that. And then some interpret it, oh, ISKCON says, you know, because in their translation, give up all religion. That means they're irreligious people. They're against Vedic religion, right? That's why we're not in Singapore, because the local Brahmins there, they presented to the government that that's our position, right? Because they wanted to keep us out of Singapore. they've been successful till today. So, does that make sense? So, all this can you can take all this, but the point is, as Krishna is saying, is that you're surrendering to him, and that it's you're performing your, because he's through the whole book said perform your duties, right, to him. So what has happened here is not the form has changed, the attitude has changed, right? Before it's like, I have my duties, I identify with these duties, I am conditioned soul, I like to do these duties, or maybe I'm not even that much, I'm not even dutiful, I have to do these things. So therefore, I'm taking it up, because Shastra says I should. But in any case, whether it's coming from Sakam, Nishkam, whatever the position, the consideration is, these are what I would be doing. Now I'm going to do that for Krishna, either directly as sannyas or indirectly through renunciation. But in any case, this activity is for Krishna. But here he's saying is, no, there you're starting with the activity, then you're going to Krishna. Right, I'm starting my conditioned nature and then going to Krishna, which is good, that's recommended, what Krishna is talking about. But better than that is start with Krishna and then come back to your position. Right? Surrender to Krishna, just work to please Krishna. Right? That's the position. Then, okay, how do I do that? So Mother Jashoda is doing that by serving him a parental ras. The cowherd boys by serving him there. We're conditioned in the material world. We use our conditioned nature to serve him. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's a matter of where you're starting the equation, with us or with Krishna. But the form of it looks the same. Otherwise, then it's thought, all this that's been said now gets thrown out the window. How would it be thrown out the window? There's repetition. At the same time, this is something unique. It hasn't been spoken before. So this stands out. This must be something prominent. So therefore, the process is there, that's there, but now he's talking about the attitude. Right? And then we see that's supported also by, what is it? You know, Manmana Bhavamat Bhakto, this aspect. And that one's said twice, the same verse. So that must be important. Right? And be the devotee, but, okay, now be my devotee, this, that, but now we're taking it. You start with that, the attitude of being Krishna's devotee. Then you move back into what you do. Does that make sense? You have affection for somebody, therefore, it's not that you have it's the affection is shown specifically because you have something to do. You have that affection. Then wherever there's an opportunity, you express it. The other, you're going to do things, I'm going to do them anyway. You know, but I'll direct that towards, like, I'm going to go out and work anyway and make money, whether I had a family or not. But now that I have a family, I'm going to direct that to the family. Right? So that's good. That's pious. But the other is, I have affection for the family, so what can I do for this family? Right? Therefore, okay, they need facility, I'll create the facility, they need, you know, attention, I'll give that, you know. Does that make sense? It's different. So we can see is that the level of consideration is higher. So that Sarvadharma Parityaja is a higher consideration of the same activities. Because ultimately that's what we're trying to get at, is split, that you have the action that you're to perform and you have the attitude that you're supposed to perform it in. So better you're performing something based on Shastra, but that should be connected to Krishna. And the attitude should be that to please Krishna. Otherwise, I can follow the Shastra, you know, connected to Krishna for purpose of material benefit, right? Or purpose of liberation. Right? You can get all that from devotional service. Right? Bhagavatam is saying that. Whatever your position, whether you're interested in liberation, whether you're interested in materialism, whether you're interested in pure unalloyed devotion, all that comes from practicing devotional service. So then the attitude, now whether it's the neophyte, madhyama, or uttama attitude, that's also there. So the quality of devotional service, and then that attitude that is there. Right? So all that combined together becomes very nice. So then, you know, so much is there to explain it. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes.
So you spoke of taking things out of context.
Yes.
And applying to another choice.
Yes.
So on a practical level, like, many issues within ISKCON.
So what I said wasn't practical? Were you listening?
Yeah.
Were you listening or not?
Yeah.
So then, what was not practical about what was said?
No. And most of the confusions are the misinterpretations within ISKCON as of today.
BBTs and BBT GBCs, not ISKCON?
No, I'm not talking about BBT.
But I was. So what's your point? Just tell me in one sentence your point. Give me your thesis. So if you can't say it in one sentence, we won't address it.
I am personally a victim of being told out of context certain things.
Okay, so that's a personal problem. But what we were dealing with is not your personal problem, but the concept of why your personal problems come up is because of this point. So that's why we're sitting here, is so that we can understand properly Shastra, so that we won't do that. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Our business here is not to address what has happened to you. Because everybody has a story. You know what I'm saying? What we're trying to address is that we understand how it functions so we in our own mind can rectify things so that we know that that confusion was there, what's right, and that we know properly how to deal so that we do not do that to others. Right? Because the idea is that one studies the Shastra, then one leads the society in one's own way, whatever it is, one's own family, one's community, the temple, whatever it is, like that, is one studies these things so that one can be a leader, right? And leaders, therefore, then are careful about making these mistakes. Okay? Okay. So we'll end here. So that, yeah. Then what? This is basically done. Okay, is that... Because this is just so that you give an overview so you understand basically how the books are presented and how we'll be looking at it, details. So then from Monday we'll start again back with Ishopanishad. So if we can read ahead, that will be very good. All that.
Right. I just keep seeing how everything that the Shastra book with all these explanations and getting up to the end, just keep giving faith.
Yes.
Bringing back the faith.
Yes.
Of the conditioned soul through all this amazing process. Very intelligent and also simple at the same time.
Yes.
To bring back the faith of the humanity in Krishna.
Yes. Yes. That's the whole, the basis. The afternoon class discusses that. It's faith is the basis of everything. Yes. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki,
Jai.
Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.
Is there any like amount approximately that we should have it every day in reading?
We're going through these lessons, so basically it depends upon what it is. I would think we'd be doing a lesson, we'll see how long it is, but right now there's three verses. Because, I mean, there's the introduction, the invocation, the three verses. Those are the first one we're dealing with.
So how it goes in the paper, one,
yeah,
two, three,
just, like that. Like that.